This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. On Friday of last week, the Kansas City Health Department issued a health advisory that stresses the need for unvaccinated individuals to not only wear masks in public, but also start the vaccination process. The report states that only 40% of Missourians are fully vaccinated, and residents should assume that one in two people in any crowd or gathering may be unvaccinated. As Southwestern Missouri grapples with the highly infectious Delta variant, Kansas City case numbers continue to rise. Here to talk about that is Dr. Brandon Comfort. He's an assistant professor and head of the Long COVID Clinic, that is what's referred to as for the long haulers, at the University of Kansas Health System. Dr. Comfort, nice to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's good to be here.
Dr. Rex Archer is back again. He's director of the Kansas City, Missouri Health Department. Rex, good morning to you.
Even all the audience listening.
Dr. Archer, you know, the rise in COVID cases related to the Delta variant isn't just a problem in Southwest Missouri. That's one of the points of our show here today. Kansas City has its own issues, right?
Absolutely. You could call this a tale of two cities. You could talk about those folks that are vaccinated as one city and those folks that aren't as another, and the outbreak is just surging in the unvaccinated. We're averaging now 110, and we're not testing enough, but we are averaging 110 new cases per day. That's six times what it was a few months ago. So our under 10s and our 19 to 10s are now going to surpass all the months back to January, and may very well here in July beat January. So this is a real problem.
Dr. Comfort, do you see it that way too?
Absolutely, Steve. You know, I'm a practicing primary care physician, and we have been seeing this in our patients. We're seeing more and more people calling in with symptoms. And by and large, it's mostly falling in our patients who haven't been vaccinated yet. So we're seeing it in the clinic, and I think our hospital numbers are reflecting that as well.
Dr. Comfort, what concerns should those folks have who are vaccinated? What would you say to them?
Yeah, so for those who are vaccinated, the risks are much lower. And so we know that the vaccines that are out there today are effective at preventing symptomatic disease. They're effective at preventing severe disease, needing to go in the hospital, and even preventing death. There have been a few reported kind of breakthrough cases coming. We're starting to hear that a little bit more, but most of those are still pretty mild cases. And so we know that the vaccine is highly effective, but still we need to be cautious. So, you know, I'm vaccinated. My wife's vaccinated. You know, a lot of the people I'm friends with are. But when we're out in public in areas where we don't necessarily know the vaccination status of everybody, I think it's appropriate to wear a mask. And I do that to kind of protect myself and my family. Go to the grocery store, those sorts of things. I still think that's probably the most prudent thing to do to slow the spread of this.
You know, Rex, given all this, why not reinstate the mask mandate given this sudden spike in COVID because of the Delta variant?
Well, our recommended protocols are for folks to wear masks. As mentioned, I've got a big concern about not just those that aren't vaccinated, but there are a large percentage of folks that are at higher risk, even if they're vaccinated. Now, the vaccine, so far, we're not seeing deaths from people that are fully vaccinated, but we are seeing some breakthrough infections. It may not be real high at this point, but if people have, you know, cancer and have been in treatment for cancer, if they've had solid organ transplant, you know, if they're over 65 or particularly over 80, they have liver disease. I mean, the list goes on and on. Probably close to 15-20% of the population has some risk that if they do have a breakthrough infection, that they could have some problems and they could spread the virus to somebody else also. So, yes, the wearing of masks is critical. And then we have to remember that even though we have about 50% of the population that is at least initiated vaccination that's eligible, we have a large percentage of folks that aren't eligible. And that's why the school issue is so critical.
Rex, maybe this is a good time to restate what the recommendation is, because my impression was it was aimed primarily at the unvaccinated.
You're correct. It is aimed primarily at that group, because those that are vaccinated, if they're only concerned about themselves, are relatively well protected. But I can tell you that by wearing a mask out in public, you help to encourage others to do so, because unfortunately, most of the unvaccinated aren't wearing masks in public.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that the action that the Kansas City School Board has taken is the appropriate action, that's where we should be going. The CDC guidelines, recommendations from Children's Mercy are that we are not at a point where it's safe to not be wearing masks. We need to protect the teachers that may be at high risk. And to be honest, I think parents need to be calling school board members and letting them know that they want their kids protected. They don't want to have to be home for 14 days or whatever multiple times this fall because there are outbreaks and kids are now being quarantined. If your kid's wearing masks, the chances of being quarantined go way, way down.
Right. So, Well, let me just hop in here. Dr. Comfort, given the spike in southwestern Missouri, given the concerns that both of you are laying out for the Kansas City Metro, why not reinstate a mandatory mask requirement to help stop the spread of this Delta variant, which, if you look at a map of the United States this morning on the New York Times site, you know, southwestern Missouri is ground zero across the country in the outbreak of this variant.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a good question, you know, and I think these mandates are difficult, right? There's a lot of kind of pushback on things when people are kind of told what to do. People don't like that, but I think if we can do the right thing, we can really encourage people. We can lead by example, as Rex was kind of stating, for those of us who are vaccinated, get out there and show that, you know, wearing masks is still the right thing to do to slow this spread. And I think, you know, the point that was brought up of there's a lot of people that aren't eligible to be vaccinated yet, right? Mm-hmm. So people under the age of 12, there's lots of people like that. And so I think we all have a responsibility to look out for one another and help each other out. And I think wearing masks is an important step in doing that. It's tried, it's true, and it's easy to do.
But Dr. Comfort, you know, recommendations aren't getting us very far along the line of people wearing masks. As I get out and about, hardly anybody's wearing a mask these days. And yet the outbreak in Missouri is pretty striking.
No, it's absolutely true. And I think when we did have the mandate back, you know, whenever that was in the fall or in the spring of 2020, you know, we did see higher uptick of people wearing masks and those sorts of things. But, you know, as a practicing primary care physician, that's really kind of my role. I like to see my patients wearing masks. I want to see everyone else around me wearing masks. And I'll leave the question up to the mandate to our policymakers and our public health officials in the city. But I would support that as a physician in the community.
But Rex, what about that? I mean, this idea that a recommendation for unvaccinated people to wear a mask, do you realistically think anyone who's unvaccinated at this point is going to heed that because they've gone months without heeding any requirement or any recommendation to get a shot? They're not going to wear a mask at this point, are they?
So I think you're raising an important challenge here. On the one hand, the CDC wanted to send the message that if you are fully vaccinated, you are pretty well protected. You know, if you would have gotten this disease, and we have to remember that we're still having about a 1% death rate of folks that get COVID that are actually dying. So the risk of death from this disease or for hospitalization and intensive care and long-term problems is still very high. It's much, much lower than the breakthrough infections if people are vaccinated. The problem is that we have a disjointed governmental system where it's fractured, and we have state legislatures in Kansas and Missouri that aren't looking at the science and the facts and don't seem to care about the economy and protecting people and are restricting our ability to do things locally. We then have the challenge where No one really, or very few folks, live, shop, pray, play, go to school, etc., in just one jurisdiction. And so if any one single jurisdiction tries to do something, then people, it's not very effective. So we really need OSHA to make a mandate that requires it in the workplace. And then we need the governors and the state legislatures to do it statewide, so we don't have this problem of we do something in Kansas City and then folks can still be exposed just across the state line or the jurisdictional line. So that's really the challenge, Steve, is yes, if I was head of OSHA, I would issue a recommendation that requires all people to be wearing masks in workplaces while we've got this Delta variant circulating. I would even go as far to say that, you know, we've got a handicap problem right now where the private universities can mandate their students to be vaccinated, and the public ones can't. So we're going to have some real disjoint education this fall when we have outbreaks in the public universities and the private universities are providing more in-class instruction than that because they're not out on isolation and quarantine.
But Rex, to your point, trying to get this level of coordination between the federal government, the state government, local governments, that's proven impossible up to this point. You don't expect anybody to flip a switch tomorrow and get everybody on the same page, do you?
Not tomorrow, but when this thing blows up in September, maybe people will wake up to the consequences of their actions.
Is that what you expect, Rex, a blow up in September?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that there will be a huge blow up because when you pull, I mean, we've had enough surge in the under 10s just from certain kinds of camps or other settings. But when we put everybody back into crowded classrooms that aren't vaccinated and we're telling parents that they don't have to have their kids wearing masks, that's a recipe for disaster. And like I said, a lot of parents are going to find out if they go with the option of not sending their kids to school with masks or not getting the school board to reverse its decision, they're going to be home with their kids an awful lot this fall.
Dr. Comfort, you have the same concerns about the month of September?
I do. I mean, I think the trends are certainly concerning right now. And I think, yeah, as we start getting people back in schools and other situations where we're inside, the weather's cooler, those sorts of things, I think that is a recipe to see cases go up even higher.
Let me ask our listeners how ready they are to start wearing masks again. Can we put the genie back in the bottle and require folks to wear masks? Would anybody adhere to a mandate like that? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Dr. Comfort, have you come across any new strategies that are emerging to convince people who are resistant to getting a shot that it's worth their while to do so?
Unfortunately, we don't have any magic formula on that, but I can tell you that we are getting more people to get vaccinated in our clinic, kind of slow and steady. You know, there are a group of people out there that really, if we can make it convenient for them, if we can, you know, make it easy, get them shot in places that they're familiar, like at their primary care office or something like that, that they'll do that. Even right before this show, I had a patient that we were able to get vaccinated right in the clinic, and he just hasn't gotten around to it, so to speak. So I think there's still a good chunk of people out there that they just haven't gotten around to it yet. And so I think if we can have some targeted outreach to our patients, for example, people that they know and trust, I think that can go a long way.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about this idea that southwestern Missouri isn't the only hot spot in the state. Kansas City, Missouri has its own concerns with the percentage of people who are getting vaccinated here. Rex, what is the percentage of people in the metro or at least in Kansas City, Missouri, who are fully vaccinated today?
So, Steve, unfortunately, because we have underfunded our data systems in public health for the last 3 or 4 decades, we actually can't tell you that. Right now, the systems across the state line don't talk well to each other. So because we live in a bi-state region, if somebody goes to a grocery store across the state line and gets vaccinated there, and I'll put in a plug for Hy-Vee just because they not only don't have lines for you to wait, but you get a $10 gift certificate if you get vaccinated there. So it's not only convenient while you're grocery shopping, but it can save you money. But the real saving of money is you don't have a copay on your health insurance from a hospitalization or something else.
Right.
So that's the real problem is I don't know how many of our residents have been vaccinated across the state line. And we also have bad systems in regards to they don't mandate that race and ethnicity are reported. So I can't tell you really even how our breakdowns are, how to more effectively communicate to various groups. I do like what the doctor said, though. One of the most influential folks is their medical doctor. And when somebody goes in for a doctor's visit, if the doctor strongly recommends and says, I've been vaccinated, I'm still wearing a mask, though, to protect you and other patients, you need to be vaccinated, too. And folks aren't sitting in the waiting room in doctor's offices without masks on. The medical profession understands the importance of wearing masks.
Let's go to some phone calls about this idea of whether it's time to reinstate a mandatory mask mandate or not. Would people adhere to a requirement like that? Let's go to Ian from Shawnee. Ian, nice to have you.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I've spent some time talking with family members about this, and I don't think there's a way we're going to talk people into getting the vaccine. There was a lot of ideas of the CDC opening things up. If you know, vaccinated, don't wear a mask. But I just think it's time to, as the government as a whole, needs to mandate that everyone get vaccinated.
Do you think people would adhere to a requirement like that? Ian, do you think people would go along and listen to a requirement like that and start wearing masks?
Well, I mean, the masks are one thing, but I think the government, just like I had to get a vaccine to go to elementary school against all the different viruses and things that are out there, they should have to get a vaccine.
Right. Ian, I appreciate the phone call. Thanks for calling. You know, Dr. Comfort, you're working with what we call long haulers over at the health system. These are folks who have had COVID symptoms for longer than 12 weeks after contracting the virus. How many people are you working with right now who have symptoms that have gone on that long?
Well, Steve, there's been quite a few. We have so far at the University of Kansas Health System, we've seen over 300 patients. We've had many more referrals beyond that we have scheduled here in the coming weeks. But so far, we've seen over 300 patients, and those are patients that we're continuing to follow going forward.
What are the symptoms of a long hauler, Dr. Comfort? What are you seeing?
The symptoms are all over the board, and in terms of severity, but also in terms of what people are presenting with. But the most common symptom that we're seeing in the long, in our long haulers, is fatigue. It's a debilitating, profound fatigue. It's not just like I'm a little run down today, sort of fatigue. People are having a really hard time getting back to work, taking care of other personal responsibilities and that sort of thing. Lots of pulmonary complaints, cough, shortness of breath, chest pain, joint aches, rashes, kidney problems. I mean, really every organ system seems to be impacted. Probably the most disturbing one for people is this brain fog. I know we're hearing a lot about that and reading a lot about that, but we got a lot of people in the community that seem to be suffering from some cognitive effects from their COVID infection.
I imagine that being able to hold on to a job if you're suffering from these kinds of symptoms, that can be tough too.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest things that has shown for me. And so I've had many patients that, you know, work in some setting where, you know, if they're just a little bit sluggish or if they're fatigued or if they can't, you know, think as quickly and efficiently as they normally do, their work performance really suffers. And we have a lot of people that don't feel like they can get back to full-time employment after having their COVID infection.
And there's a financial hardship that probably accompanies this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just not working. That's one. But also, you know, medical bills can be a problem as well. And so with a lot of these conditions, as you can imagine, if you're presenting with symptoms across multiple organ systems, that increases the number of tests that we tend to order, or the other kind of specialists that we get involved. And so it can certainly increase the amount of care that each patient gets.
I assume there's probably a feeling of desperation that's attached to someone who is suffering month after month after month with symptoms like this. What do you see there?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, people are very frustrated with this, and it's pretty easy to start losing hope if you're, you know, 5-6 months into this and don't feel like you're back to being 100%. And so that's a big part of this, is trying to support people both emotionally through this. The good news is, though, I mean, if there is a silver lining, which we're always kind of looking for, that is that most people that we've seen who develop long COVID are getting better over time. It just takes an exceedingly long amount of time. We're talking months. We have a few patients that have now had symptoms for close to a year, but they are getting better slowly. And so I think that's the silver lining that we're seeing. And, you know, our rehabilitation department here, our physical medicine rehabilitation department, are really the kind of the keys in terms of what we're doing, helping with physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. These therapies tend to be the most effective way to get people back a little bit quicker.
You just mentioned speech therapy. Why speech therapy?
Yeah, interesting. I had to learn about this a little bit myself, but our speech therapists are a wonderful resource. They help a lot of people with cognitive impairment. So they work with a lot of patients after they've had a stroke or other traumatic brain injuries and things like that. And they have been a key player in our strategy to help people with the brain fog and some of the cognitive effects, helping them kind of get back to their old self.
What percentage of people who contract COVID actually wind up with long hauler symptoms? Do you have any numbers on that?
The numbers are tough to pinpoint. There's been many studies now. They're really all over the board because they're using different kind of requirements on who's being studied and that sort of thing. But our best estimate is probably around 10% of people are having some form of post-COVID conditions. And so that's probably the best estimate that we've seen so far.
One final point here. I understand you're seeing more young people than maybe you might have anticipated.
Absolutely. So the long COVID kind of syndrome has surprised us. We've seen many people who are in their, you know, 20s, 30s that are having ongoing symptoms. Many of them had a relatively mild case of acute COVID, but their symptoms just never really went away. And so that's been very surprising to us. And we don't really know why. So there's certainly more questions than answers with why certain people are getting long COVID symptoms and others recover within a few weeks.
You know, Rex Archer, yeah. you listen to Dr. Comfort describing these symptoms, and you almost can't believe somebody would choose not to get a vaccine.
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing, Steve, is that, you know, and I can remember back when I was in my 20s, where in many ways I thought I was invulnerable. Now, I got my flu shot every year because I didn't want to kill a patient because I got influenza and gave it to a patient. So some folks in those age groups may still think, well, I can handle COVID. I'm not worried about these things. But as you said, a 10% chance that you might end up with long-term functioning of your brain that's not working as well, so that you may hold on to your job but not get the next promotion. I mean, this is a concern, and we just keep needing to reinforce the message that everybody needs to get vaccinated. In fact, the longer we fool around with this, the more there'll be another variant much worse than the Delta. You know, it can get all the way down to Omega, and we know what that symbolizes. So we've got to get folks vaccinated, and, you know, the docs are working on it. When all these groups are saying this is what you need to do, but people are influenced by their peers. And so anybody listening here, probably most of this audience is already vaccinated, but have you really been working on getting your friends and coworkers to get vaccinated, putting a little positive peer pressure on folks.
Now, I think Rebecca from Kansas City, Missouri, wants to make a point similar to that, Rex. Rebecca, you're on the show. Nice to have you.
Hi, thank you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that at my work, we've already had 4 known cases. There's other people that are sick, but
I think we lost Rebecca here. I think we're having some trouble with our phones here this morning. Dr. Comfort, why are go ahead, Rex.
Yeah, I've been kicked off a couple times, so if you asked me a question and I didn't respond, it was because I didn't hear.
We'll get our highly trained technical staff on this issue shortly here. Dr. Comfort, why are most long-haul clinics across the country seeing more women than men?
We don't know the answer to that. And so it's not clear if women are more likely to get long COVID than men, or are men not coming into the clinic, basically. And we don't know the answer to that. There's a lot of kind of research emphasis behind answering some of those basic questions, just basic epidemiology of how many people are going to get this. Are there people that are more likely than others, that sort of thing. But there's a lot of support from the NIH. They've allocated, I think, like $1 billion going out to different academic centers to study some of these very questions.
Rex, Paul from Platte City wants to know why when we'll be able to get to the point where businesses can mandate vaccinations of their employees. Can they do that right now or not, Rex?
They can. Unless they're governmental entities, I believe that the state legislature did something to prohibit governmental entities from doing that. But the private sector can do that. There are businesses that are doing that right now, and some of them have also put other kinds of restrictions, like you can't do airline travel if you're not vaccinated, because the risk of going someplace and coming back, you may bring it back into the workplace. So that is something that is legal to do.
Dr. Comfort, Katie on Twitter, has written us and asks, my 65-year-old parents won't get vaccinated because they fear negative effects of vaccine based on anecdotes they're hearing. How can I urge them to get a vax?
There are some side effects that are to be expected. They're very mild for the most part, sore arms, maybe some aches and that sort of thing. But the risk of getting COVID far exceed any risk with the vaccine. I mean, without question. And so I would strongly encourage them to get the vaccine. I would certainly fear, especially they're in a vulnerable age group, 65 and older. We really want all of them to be vaccinated.
One more question about the long haulers, Dr. Comfort. I assume this is the billion-dollar question, but why do some folks suffer these symptoms for such a long period of time compared to others who do not? Do you have any sense of what the answer to that is?
You know, unfortunately, Steve, not really. That's the problem with long COVID, is that there's way more questions than answers. But, you know, the biological mechanisms haven't been fleshed out, but there's been a lot of different theories on this. It seems to be, there's certainly some effect on the immune system. So immune kind of system dysregulation, and why certain people are more prone to that than others. That is a question. Boy, that's a multi-billion-dollar question. Yeah. I mean, if we could find that answer out, that would be amazing.
You know, Rex, as we wrap up here, you know, I think so many folks are tired of this topic. They're tired of talking about masks. They're tired of everything connected to COVID-19. But one takeaway from this conversation is it ain't going away anytime soon. I'm seeing that correctly, right?
Absolutely. If you think you can put off getting vaccinated because this is not going to be around, most of us are predicting that there'll be an annual COVID booster or shot that will be required now that this has gotten so prevalent. There'll be continued mutations, et cetera. Just look at the odds. If you're over 65, you know, and you get COVID, you have a huge, unfortunately, chance, 1-2% of dying. The odds of a breakthrough infection if you get fully vaccinated are, you know, at least 1,000 to 1. So, you know, get vaccinated. This is the way to protect yourself and each other. Do it now.
That's the voice of Dr. Rex Archer. He's director of the Kansas City, Missouri Health Department. Rex, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve.
Dr. Brandon Comfort joined us. He's an assistant professor and head of the Long COVID Clinic at the University of Kansas Health System. Dr. Comfort, sure appreciate your time, too.
Yeah, thanks for having me.